What's up, guys? I'm Alex.
And I'm Corey.
And we're challenging you to think about gaming in a different way.
On this show, we'll talk about the games we love and why they're important.
This is Super Thought Bros. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Super Thought Bros. Today, it is just me. Alex, I'm doing a solo episode, and I have no idea what I'm doing, and this is terrifying. But that actually falls right in line with what we're talking about today. Today's game is Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch. Ni No Kuni first came out on the PS3 in Japan in 2010, and then over in the West the following year. And it's been on a plethora of consoles since then, from, you know, the PS3 to the Nintendo DS, and finally this year, at long last, on the Nintendo Switch, which is what I played the game on. The game was published by Bandai Namco, but the real draw for me was that the character design and some of the hand-drawn cutscene animations were done by Studio Ghibli, which is the Japanese studio responsible for some of my favorite movies ever, including Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle. I've personally been wanting to play Ni No Kuni for years, but I never got around to it on the PS3 or PS4 for some reason. I think I was partly worried at the number of hours I would have to pour into it, as it's an infamously thick and long JRPG. But when it was finally announced for the Switch, I decided it was time to shell out the cash and jump into the game. I'll be the first to admit I had some major problems with it. The combat system at times really drove me up the wall. It's a combination of turn-based and live-action combat, but it just didn't hit home for me. Other people had problems with the combat as well, and they ended up doing a complete overhaul of the battle system for the sequel of the game, Ni No Kuni 2. I personally didn't like stumbling through menus just so I could defend myself from a time-sensitive attack rather than just press a button on the controller. And I found my teammates dying quite frequently and spent a lot of my time healing them, even though they were in all-out defensive mode. But maybe I'm just bad at video games. But despite my dislike of the combat system, the story, character, and world design, music, overall themes, metaphors, everything established in this game ultimately made it worth my while. I'm giving you a spoiler warning right now, because this game has so much symbolism, and I can't talk about what it all represents unless I spoil the final bosses and the post-game, so consider yourself warned. The game follows the story of Oliver, a 10-year-old boy who lives in a place called Motortown, more or less every town USA. Well, I guess it would be every town Japan, or the equivalent of that. Very early on, Oliver falls into a river, and his very loving and affectionate mother dies while trying to rescue him from drowning. After her death, Oliver doesn't really know what to do, and he doesn't think he can go on. So he cries into this doll that his mother gave him, which he named Mr. Drippy. And Oliver's tears bring Mr. Drippy to life. Mr. Drippy tells him that his world is in danger, this fantasy world, and it's facing destruction at the hands of an evil wizard known as Shadar. And that Oliver is the pure-hearted one, the only one who can save his world, Mr. Drippy's world, from calamity. As added incentive, Mr. Drippy suggests perhaps he can save his mother if he comes along for the ride, because everyone in the fantasy world is connected to the real one via a soulmate. If Oliver saves his mother's soulmate, then he might be able to bring her back to life in the real world. A little confusing, I'll elaborate more on that later. Oliver ultimately decides to go with Mr. Drippy, and they transverse into a fantasy world with monsters, magic, and death everywhere. If you've played this game before, I want you to try and approach what I'm going to say with an open mind, as in this episode, I'm going to argue that the entirety of Mr. Drippy's fantasy world all exists within the confines of Oliver's mind, and in fact, is not real. I believe the fantasy world is actually a figment of Oliver's imagination, a coping mechanism to help him deal with the passing of his mother. Oliver in this game is dealing with death the only way that a 10-year-old might know how to do, by playing pretend. he has created, in his mind, a world to escape to. A world where he is the chosen one, a world where he feels special, and he is necessary to the world's survival. He's created a scenario in his mind where he can cling on to his mother's memory, a scenario where he can actually bring her back to life. Unwilling to deal with her death, he goes into this imaginary world believing he can bring her back, not yet ready to wrestle with the reality that his mother is in fact not coming back. And as he eventually discovers, there is no way to bring her back, and he must live with that reality and begin to accept it. The first gameplay mechanic I'm going to talk about is called Pieces of Heart. Oliver, as I said, has been dubbed by Mr. Drippy as the pure-hearted one, or the one that can save the world. Just as a child who is untainted by the burdens of the world at the age of 10, Oliver is, by nature, a person who sees the good in everyone and really wants to help people when they're in need. You know when you're really invested in something, either at work or a project you're working on, that you kind of forget everything else that's been going on in your life? That's what Oliver has done by embarking on this imaginary quest. He's given himself a task to do, a world to save, a mother to bring back. So he isn't actually thinking too much about his mother's death, let alone dealing with his own grief. He frequently goes around in the fantasy world repairing hearts of the brokenhearted, or people who have lost themselves in light of Shadar's constant threat of death. For example, a brokenhearted person may be very cruel to the people around them, meaning that Oliver needs to find a bit of kindness in another's heart and give it to that person in need. Or someone may be unwilling to do their job because they see no point in life anymore because Shadar is going to kill them sooner or later. So Oliver needs to find them enthusiasm to make them whole again. These missions are usually side quests, but it gives a lot of depth and deeper meaning to the world and a lot of personality to even NPCs that you interact with only once or twice. But the game takes this a step further with the concept of soulmates, which tie the fantasy world to reality. Everyone in the fantasy world has a soulmate in the real world, or someone that looks and acts just like them. The idea of soulmates, to Oliver, is him transforming the people of his town, the people he knows and grows up with, into characters in his fantasy world. For example, Oliver encounters a pig queen who has been overcome with laziness and gluttony, so he must return to the real world to help one of his neighbors who has been suffering from binge eating disorder. Yes, Oliver is trying to help bring his mom back, and perhaps he believes he is doing so by progressing through the fantasy world, but what he is actually doing is helping the people in his small community who have just suffered the loss of one of their own, and are all dealing with grief in their own ways, which ties us back to the eating disorder that I talked about earlier. When Oliver goes to help him, he's his usual cheery, optimistic self who is created a task to do, so he's not thinking about his mother's death. And these people in the town think, well, if Oliver's mother has passed away and he still has light in his heart, then I can be strong for him too. Even though they think it's just cute when he's casting a spell on them. Also, people in the real world can't see Oliver's spell casting, they just see him waving a wand and they don't see the actual spells, nor do they see Mr. Drippy, because they're not real. They only exist in Oliver's imagination. Sometimes, Oliver will go to people in need, but their despair will be so strong that they manifest into shadows of themselves, known as nightmares, and Oliver will have to fight them. This is employed to introduce some combat into the more story-oriented parts of the game, but the symbolism is quite strong. In order to make someone whole again, Oliver literally has to purge them of this sickness that has been latching onto them like a parasite and preventing them from living full lives. The most memorable instance of this for me is when Oliver encounters in his fantasy world one of the quote-unquote great sages and his daughter, whom Oliver allegedly needs to help him save his mother. But neither of them seem to be quite right. The great sage seems to be cruel and dismissive to Oliver, saying he's no longer a great sage and now he's a banana seller. And his daughter is in a unresponsive zombie-like state, and she can barely utter a single word. Mr. Drippy proposes they need to help their soulmates in Oliver's world. So back in the real world, Oliver comes upon Starry Mary, a girl in his neighborhood who he had previously deemed weird because she sits in her room all day and just stares at the other children out of her bedroom window, and she happens to bear an uncanny resemblance to the great sage's daughter. Oliver goes up to her room to talk to her, and she says she's sick and that she can't go into the outside world, and reveals that she is frightened what her father will do if she tries to go outside. She says her parents have been fighting a lot of late, with her father working like crazy at his new job, and Mary rarely sees him. Deep down, as we discover later, Mary has convinced herself that she is sick because she fears that if she goes outside or leaves the house, her parents will split up, because she feels like she's the only thing that's keeping them together. So Oliver goes to the car repair, where Mary's father works. When Oliver arrives, the man is working aggressively and frantically, and his wife comes to offer him lunch, and he swipes the food away, almost hitting her in the process. Then right before Oliver's eyes, a nightmare sprawls out of Mary's father's body, and Oliver has to do battle with him, eventually defeating him. And when the shadow falls, the man sinks to his knees, and his wife cradles him in his arms. Oliver then takes a bit of kindness from the wife's heart and gives it to her spouse to make him whole again. Mary's father then returns home to apologize to Mary, telling her it's okay to go outside again and everything will be okay. It's a very touching scene. Once their real-world counterparts have been restored, the characters in Oliver's fantasy world are now freed from their ailments, and the adventure continues with their assistance. It's interesting that Oliver equates these people in the real world to their fantasy world counterparts. For example, Mary is, as Oliver says, a weird girl who doesn't talk to anyone, so she becomes a literal zombie in his fantasy world. Her father is a cranky old man who is cold and always working intensely at his new job, so the great sage in the fantasy world is a dismissive old man at his new job selling bananas. I viewed this entire sequence of the story as a man who has been stressed from the pressures of work and was taking it out on his family. At heart, he wasn't a bad person, but he let the stress of his own demons begin to take hold of him and lash out at the people he actually cared about the most and that were trying to help him. I think I said this in our Celeste episode, but I believe when people are unkind to others, it says far more about them and what they're dealing with than it does about you, who is on the receiving end of the treatment, unless you were mean to them in the first place and you started it. So, to touch on the combat of the game very briefly, Oliver and his party fight battles using creatures called familiars. There are these little critters Oliver can capture and level up. I believe that they are stuffed animals that Oliver is manipulating and make fight each other. I remember when I was younger, I had a whole bin of Beanie Babies that I made fight each other, and they all had very specific power rankings and abilities that I dubbed upon them. Mr. Drippy himself was originally a stuffed animal that Oliver's mother gave to him, and his tears transformed him into a walking, Scottish accent-talking fairy. And Mr. Drippy looks very familiar to these familiars. They all look like cute, cuddly little stuffed animals that allow Oliver to escape his reality. The familiars level up alongside Oliver, meaning that they're usually only about as strong as Oliver is. And they usually have higher defenses and attacks than Oliver, meaning you're usually encouraged to fight with the familiars and save Oliver for spellcasting and for healing. I think these familiars, in a way, represent vulnerability, or Oliver's fear of being vulnerable and actually dealing with the loss of his mother. When you're dealing with something traumatic, it is sometimes very difficult to allow yourself to be vulnerable and feel these feelings that you feel because you're scared they could overwhelm you. So instead of Oliver letting himself feel these feelings and sending himself into battle, he actively sends another part of himself, the familiars, to fight. Which might be why Oliver is so weak at the beginning of the game. He usually, gets one-shotted pretty easily. Because he is subconsciously scared to feel his grief and sorrow, he allows his stuffed animals to go into battle for him and absorb the shock. And as he levels up and gets stronger and continues on his adventure, he becomes more and more prepared to deal with his reality, as do his stats increase, which I think are directly equated to his willingness to deal with what he is going through. Which leads me into when Oliver finally does stare his grief straight in the face. Shadar is the evil wizard that threatens to destroy the fantasy world, and I believe he is a representation of Oliver's grief and sorrow and the concept of death itself. Shadar says that he is a part of Oliver, that they are in fact soulmates. The entire world that Oliver has created in his mind, and all the people that live there, they are all living in fear, and they are all ruled over by the dark wizard Shadar, which is an entity that represents imminent and unexpected death. This is just what happened to Oliver's mother, a death from a freak accident that Oliver probably feels responsible for, seeing as she jumped into the river to save him. This is a world where all people and creatures live in fear of Shadar, knowing he could bring about their destruction at any minute, which is the equivalent of not being able to live a full life because one is frightened by their own mortality, which goes back to our discussion of the brokenhearted people and why so many people in the fantasy world, and ultimately the real world as well, are feeling these same feelings that Oliver does, these feelings of grief, despair, and brokenheartedness. These are concepts Oliver comes to question throughout his quest. If death could take my mother at any moment, it could just as easily take me, along with anyone else as well. Originally, in the fantasy world's backstory, Shadar was a young wizard who wished to save people from a brutal war, but he failed to do so, became bitter and weary of the world, and after seeing the wickedness in people's heart that was on display during these wars, he wished to bring destruction to the world because he felt the human race was doomed. Mr. Drippy originally tells Oliver that Shadar captured his mother, meaning that she would still be alive in the real world, and there was hope of saving her. But Shadar later reveals that Oliver's mother had actually escaped, traveled to another time, and died there, meaning she was gone for good. It is only then, in that moment, that Oliver is forced to grapple with the reality of his mother being truly gone. And after growing up so much on his travels, he is actually able to do so, and begins to do battle with Shadar. The boss battle with Shadar is in three phases. It starts off with Shadar in his human form, and as the battle continues, he transforms into increasingly less human-like versions of the wizard, including a final version that has a great big void of nothingness inside his mouth. I believe this represents Oliver originally pinning the death of his mother on one concrete personification of someone that took his mother away from him, or a physical person thing that he could pin the blame on. But as the battle continues, it becomes more apparent that Oliver is fighting not against a person, but an entity of his own emotions. He's battling his own grief, his own demons. After all, remember Shadar said that he was a part of Oliver and that they were soulmates. Oliver finally has gained the courage to confront his grief head-on, in its most primal and emotional state. And because of all the people he's helped and all the friends he's made along the journey, who not only help him in battle, but lift him up and help him deal with his grief, he is able to attack his fears head-on. And upon finally defeating Shadar, Oliver has a touching scene with the memory of his mother, where he's finally able to let her go. However, this brings us to the true main antagonist of the game, the White Witch. The White Witch is a similar concept as Shadar, but I think it is taken a step further. Throughout the game, Shadar is given orders by the White Witch and a mysterious group of 12 cloaked figures known as the Council. I'll come back to them later. If Shadar is the manifestation of Oliver's grief and despair and the concept of death, then I believe the White Witch is what happens when Oliver gives in to that despair. In the lore of the fantasy world that Oliver has created, the White Witch was originally a queen who found a spell that was so powerful it could, in theory, make the world a better place for all her subjects, even though how that was going to be done was unclear. But at the time, the White Witch turned out to be not strong enough to wield the spell correctly, and it ended up turning everyone she was trying to help into mindless zombies. And after years of ruminating on the chaos she had created, her mind had grown warped. She now wants to destroy all mankind because she finds the world to be imperfect, and wants to restart it from scratch. This, I think, can be equated to Oliver's succumbing to his despair at the loss of his mother, giving up on life, entering a deep depression, or perhaps, as an extreme example, even killing himself. As depression and suicide is usually spurred by an igniting event, such as getting fired, ending a relationship, or in this case, the death of a loved one. Which is exactly why the White Witch has control over Shadar. Shadar represents the igniting event of Oliver's mother's death, or death itself, which is only opening the door to the danger of the White Witch, which is giving in to that despair caused by the igniting event. The White Witch has the power to release a spell called Mana, which will turn everyone in the kingdom into zombies that will ultimately perish and die, thus ending the world that Oliver has created. Wouldn't that also represent the end of the real world as well? Oliver completely shutting off, even ending his own life and making everything just go away. The White Witch says that humans are imperfect, and maybe that's subconsciously what Oliver believes, that feeling this hurt and this pain is undesirable, and it would just be easier to not feel it at all, and remove the choice of having to deal with one's emotions in the first place. This is where the council that I previously mentioned comes in. In yet another power shift, there are three frickin' sets of supervillains in this game. The council is technically in control of the White Witch the whole time. The White Witch is in control of Shadar. The White Witch is ruled by the council. So the White Witch attempts to make everyone's life better by using a spell that would turn them into zombies, and create a world where people are ruled by a group of people who think they know what is best for all people, aka the council. They want to remove people's free choice, which is exactly what the council wants. To remove people's ability to make decisions for their own, so that the council can create a society molded in their own image. Just as these monsters, these zombies, are controlled by the White Witch, she is in turn controlled by the Council, a group of 12 wizards that have been pulling the strings in the kingdom for thousands of years. It's interesting that the White Witch wants to make the world better by taking away people's choice, when in fact she has been the victim to that same problem for years. And as I said earlier, in Oliver's mind, wouldn't it just be better to remove the concept of free choice? Remove the capability for humans to grieve and become, as it manifests in the fantasy world, non-thinking zombie creatures? Then he wouldn't have to feel the true extent of pain, sorrow, and fear that he's been pushing down after his mother's death. All these fears that Oliver carries, the fear of death, the fear of dealing with his grief, the fear of giving in to that grief, his fear of making the choice to grieve, they were all born when his mother first died. But along his journey, he's grown up so much. When the White Witch is finally defeated, she reiterates that the world and its people are imperfect. But Oliver retorts that he sees people as just people, doing their best to live their lives and be the best they can be with what they're given. We all have pain and struggles that we're working through. Sometimes that can be dealing with hopelessness and depression. Sometimes that can be feeling you can't do your job the way you want to. And sometimes that may be dealing with the death of your mother. But struggling through these difficult times and pushing through them makes us stronger people. And as Oliver discovers, it is also what makes us human and makes life worth living. In Oliver's closing line of the game, he says, "Mom, I'm going to get on with my life." As the writer suggests, through his long journey into the depths of his imagination, he's dealt with his own grief as best he can, and along the way has helped so many other people find their own light in the difficult moments of their own lives. All right, That's Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, a deep dive. I enjoyed this game. I thought the story was beautiful. I think all these metaphors are wonderful. The combat system, again, was frustrating to me, but if you enjoy JRPGs, and if you enjoy Studio Ghibli, it's definitely worth looking into, because what it says about humans, the feelings we feel, being scared to feel those feelings, and ultimately coming to terms with them is really beautiful. That's all I got for you today, guys. You can check us out on Twitch at Super Thought Bros. We do live streams. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts. And we'll be coming at you with another episode soon. I'm Alex. See you next time.